This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Net Front Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks, ahead of the Blues facing the New York Islanders in the middle game of a three-game homestand. Well, Matt, our heroes returned from the road, a 2-1 road trip where they had three comeback efforts, two of them successful, and they fell behind again. But this time, Matt, it's tough. The Blues were down 2-0 to the Minnesota Wild on their fifth shot allowed. So they had kind of a tough luck first couple of periods against the Wild before the wheels came off.
Yeah, and the first 35 minutes of that game, it was a lot of St. Louis. Obviously, the special teams hurt them. They allowed that one quick goal on the power play. They allowed the one goal on the shorthanded opportunity for the Wild. And through those first 35 minutes, it was three even strength shots on goal. You know, like that was it. Then, you know, the fourth line had a shift where Minnesota got, you know, three or four shots on goal against the Blues. And, you know, the third period starts and Rossi gets that goal off a Letty turnover. And that was basically it. I mean, this is kind of the danger that they run when they play, you know, so many games from behind. You know, maybe you're winning the possession battle, but you're not winning on the scoreboard. You fall behind. And suddenly the other team figures it out, and there goes your opportunity to kind of make a little bit of a push. So, you know, honestly, Tuesday's game didn't really strike me as that different from the other ones. You know, when you see, you know, Seattle, you played half a good game. In San Jose, you played two-thirds of a good game. In Vegas, like, maybe a half, you know? Like, they started the show a little bit something in the third, a little bit in the first, like, it, and then on Tuesday, you know, you maybe count it as half of a good game. So more of the same. And it's just kind of a difference to me what the order is of those good spells and bad spells. We've seen them a lot this season, and they just happen to happen at different times of the season, it seems, or different times of the game, it seems.
Well, we'll start going down the list of things that our guys need to work on here. You know, it was unfortunate, you know, we've the dead horse that is the Nick Leddy situation, you know, which is the weekly segment here on the Net Front. Unfortunately, he has an especially tough time of it. And then ends up now out of the lineup, apparently trying to play through something. And I don't know how much that contributed to Granister. Didn't want to speculate how much that contributed to some of the mishaps that occurred. But as a result, Ryan Suter, who's played very well, despite being like a 900 years old, is going to get a chance to fill in and log tough minutes with Colton Parayko for at least one game.
Yeah, so just quick news on the Nick Leddy front, out against the Islanders with a lower body injury. Drew Bannister still called him day-to-day. He did not skate yesterday in practice, yesterday being Wednesday. He did not skate in Wednesday's practice, and he was not on the ice for optional morning skate this morning on Thursday. So usually when guys are closer to returning, you'll see them kind of get back into it. I mean, even though Texier has missed, this will be his fourth game that he'll miss against the Islanders. We've seen him on the ice at various points throughout this last week. So we'll be curious to see when Nick Leddy reappears on the ice and when he's ready to go again for the Blues. And, you know, as you mentioned, we've talked about this before. It's just a role that he hasn't played and hasn't been asked to do throughout his career. And that's coming to a shutdown role and kill penalties and face top lines. That's just something that wasn't part of his job description in Chicago or Detroit or the Island. That just wasn't what he did. And he's, you know, last year we liked what he did in that role as well as he could have done. And we've talked about it many times that when you don't have that number one defenseman, you can't properly slot everyone else into their roles according to their skill set, according to their experience. what they're able to do on a night-to-night basis. So that just kind of reared up more recently with Nicoletti. The mistakes have been loud, and they've all kind of resulted in goals against. You know, you look at the other night of the Hartman power play goal, kind of goes around, you know, the three defenders that collapsed on Kaprizov. The turnover to Kaprizov before the Rossi goal by, you know, the Letty turnover there. In Vegas, he had a turnover that led to a Shea Theodore goal. In San Jose, there were a couple mistakes you can kind of look at and nitpick. So a lot of his mistakes have been loud and they've turned into goals. And I think that's the other part of this is goaltenders, when Nicoletti is on the ice, have a 800, 804, 805 save percentage, something like that. So it's not like he's getting bailed out by goalies. They're, in fact, doing the opposite when Nicoletti's on the ice. So the numbers look bad. The eight goals against look bad. You know, the underlines are kind of hit and miss. Some are good, some are bad. And it all has kind of pointed towards the optics that, you know, Nicoletti hasn't had a good start to the season. And
we need to point out he's not that bad of a player. He's okay. He's just being asked to do a lot. And sometimes, you know, when you're in a rut or just you're in a bad stretch of luck, even stuff just happens. It follows you. It happens to you. You don't get bailed out. It snowballs. And so it did all of that to Nick. And then, of course, now he's got to miss time. But I will say, again, add this to the conversation. It was not you guys asked to talk to him because you wanted to know, try to get his explanation for what happened. And he came out and faced it, you know, faced the questions about what happened. And a fair number of guys wouldn't have done that. And so we got to point out, too, besides being a good teammate, he's a class act and stand-up guy. And it's just unfortunate when that happens to a guy who's gone up. I think he's exceeded expectations, frankly, since he's been here. And, no, he's getting rewarded for it. Of course, the team gave him a nice contract, but he's still I would make him a plus based on just somebody had to do that, and that somebody was him.
Yeah, and, like, the goalies haven't helped him, but he hasn't really helped himself a ton. I think there's plenty of responsibility to go around with that, those struggles that he's had, right? And you mentioned Ryan Suter. You know, I don't think we would have thought it would have been this early to see him in a top pair role. And I've thought about this and wondered, you know, is that a top pair in name only? Do they give some of the harder matchups to Broberg and Falk because they've liked how they've played so far? They just didn't want to split them up, or do they stick with giving those tougher matchups to, you know, Parayko and whoever his partner would be? Especially at home, you get to dictate that sort of stuff. So while Letty is injured, I want to see how they deploy those guys in the back end and see, you know, is it truly a top pairing, Suter Parayko, or is it just that way in name only and the true responsibilities are going to guys like Broberg and Falk? I mean, it's been about 2 years, I would say, since Ryan Suter has been asked to do a top pair role. That was in Dallas. He was paired with Miro Heiskanen. He was kind of in a similar situation that we're talking about in Nicoletti. Like, he's not really suited for that role right now at this point in his career at 39 years old. He has done it plenty in the past. Honestly, I look at Suter's minutes right now and see them at around 16 minutes, and that's a pretty good chunk for most defensemen. But for him, that's the lowest, you know, average in his career. So he's a guy that's used to playing big minutes. He gets a lot of them. He's played tough matchups. Like, he has experience doing this. It's just a matter of whether he can keep up to it right now.
Yeah, it must be pointed out that what are there, like a half dozen guys in the history of the game who've played more games on the blue line?
Yeah, not a lot.
Which is pretty incredible. Yeah. He's been durable, and he's played at a high level. Now, even though he's getting paid by three teams right now, that's just more of a reflection of the fact he's had a great career than where he's at, because he can still play some.
Yeah, and he will – I think he's going to hit 1,500 games this season. So that's pretty impressive. Like, that's a lot of hockey.
A lot of hockey. For a guy on the blue line, the game finds you.
Yeah.
You're not skating around the perimeter as a forward.
Yeah, like, this is season 20. I think, you know, Hockman wrote about it the other day. Like, his first games in St. Louis were in Savas Center. You know, like, It's Avis Arena. It wasn't. They've undergone some name changes in this building since then, and some renovations and everything. So he's seen a lot of the game.
Now, also because of this change, we're going to get another look at P.O. Joseph. He, you know, it's hard to judge. I mean, you've seen a little bit of him. He had one situation where clearly he lost track of something he should have been paying attention to in a scenario out there. But broadly speaking, from the preseason to what you, the little bit you've seen him in a real game, your thoughts on him? And, you know, it seems like a perfectly capable guy for the third line. You're not at that point asking him to do too much, or for the third pairing.
Yeah, I mean, he's very long. And in Vegas, that first game he played, he was able to break up plays a couple times in that first period with his length, using his stick, getting in passing lanes. There was one instance around the net front where I think it was a puck coming from the corner, and he was able to pick off that pass and get out of the zone. And then there was another play in transition where Vegas tried a long stretch pass, and P.O. Joseph was there to pick it off. So the length helps. The size helps. He skates decently well. He'll be playing on his strong side tonight, which is what he's been used to. In Vegas, he was asked to play on the right side, and that has been something that hasn't been very commonplace for him in his career. You know, he did have that one mistake. I think is that the Barbashev goal or the Eichel goal? One of the two of them in that first period where he got kind of spun around, coming back into the zone, and one bounce the other way, and I think it was Barbashev on the back post was left wide open. So good and bad. And, you know, it's, I think the more telling thing with this is, you know, Scott Perunovich is very, very clearly number eight on the depth chart here. You know, two opportunities that the Blues have had to put in a new defenseman on the back end, and two times they've gone with P.O. Joseph and not Scott Perunovich. And, you know, perhaps part of that is the role that they're looking to fill. You know, when you bring out Matt Kessel or you bring out Nick Leddy, those aren't guys that play on the power play, right? So perhaps if the Blues were down a guy like Justin Falk and they need a more offensive-minded guy, that would be a potential spot for Perunovich to come in and play a little bit. But as of right now, he's, I think, pretty fairly planted as number eight right now, behind P.O. Joseph.
Yeah, he's kind of fallen into this, like a Kalen Addison, who, you know, came into the league and he was a power play guy, but he couldn't crack the Wild and in regular minutes. And then he moves on and still can't. I guess the Sharks couldn't crack it there either. That's what he does. And if he's, but he's got to play an overall game. And right now, at least for the second power play unit, the little bit that you've seen of it so far, it seems like Roberg's fine in that role. For, again, it's not a very dynamic group of players and hasn't seen a ton of ice, but he seems comfortable enough manning the point.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to really get a read on them so far. Just they haven't had a lot of ice time, haven't had a lot of consistent ice time. Honestly, haven't really looked all that dynamic, and, you know, they haven't been giving up shorthanded goals, but they haven't been generating a ton either. And, you know, you mentioned Kalen Addison, and to me, that's been the comp that I have been using in terms of, like, what the Blues would be able to get on the trade market for a guy like Scott Perunovich. I mean, like last year, this was the trade that Minnesota and San Jose made. It was Addison for a fifth round pick and Adam Raska. So, like, that's kind of the value that Addison had at the time. And at that time, he played 92 games and had 38 points. He'd actually scored in the NHL. So that's more than Scott Perunovich has under his belt. And, you know, right now Perunovich is 54 games, 17 points. So it's not apples to apples, but it's another undersized defenseman who's offensively tinted. And, you know, Perunovich right now is, you know, a year or two older than Addison is as well. So you kind of know a little bit more what you have in a fully formed 26-year-old than, you know, Addison, who last year when he was traded was 23 years old. So, yeah, you know, Scott, we'll see if they end up what they do with the roster when they do get guys like Texier or Sundquist back and they need to create roster space. Whether that's sending Bolduc down to the AHL, whether that's waiving a guy like Kapanen, or you know Nathan Walker has been waived and cleared before, whether that's waiving Stapurinovich. Like, there are a lot of decisions and options and choices that the Blues need to make. And there's also, I guess, technically you can send down Matt Kessel. He's still waivers exempt. But if he's in your lineup every night, I can't see that being a move that they make. But the point is, they have decisions to make. Perunovic is, I believe, the only player on the active roster that hasn't played a game yet. And, you know, we always say the coaches lie, the players may lie, but the ice time never lies.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, he's in a situation where, you know, his agent could ask for a trade, but to your point, then, okay, fine. But the other thing for the Blues is, okay, so he's running out of time, obviously, unless something changes here in the near future, as far as this organization goes. We know that, you know, Tucker could fill in, but he's limited in terms of, you know, he's a tough guy, but you know, certainly the total opposite of what Perunovic offers. And also you kind of wonder where you plug him in, based on some of his limitations, defensively. Who would be beyond that, the next man up, the Kali Rosen equivalent that would come in and plug in, let's say, if you finally turn the page on Perunovic, and see if there's another place for him out there? You're going to want to have some protection in case, you know, a couple things happen, which inevitably do.
Yeah, and like, I don't want to inscribe the gravestone quite yet on Stap Perunovic, but yeah, you make a good point about depth and wanting bodies and wanting to have people come in and fill in, because last year the Blues were one of the healthiest teams in the league, if not the healthiest. I think they probably went 30 to 40 games in a row without having a guy injured. And that is just an absurd stretch. And obviously this year, that's not the case, not going to be the case all year with Torrey Krug out, with guys like Sundqvist recovering from surgery and things like that. But the fact is that injuries pop up, you're going to need some depth. And, you know, thinking about the AHL, you know, I watched both of their games this weekend, and Samuel Johannesson, he has a bit of wiggle in his game, a decent bit of confidence with the puck. He's shown an ability to be offensively productive in Sweden before he came over to North America this year. And, you know, he's a guy who's running their first power play unit in Springfield right now. Buchinger is running the second one, but Johannesson has a little bit more pro experience. He has some dynamic elements to his game. And when I spoke to him in preseason training camp, he had mentioned, like, yeah, I just need to be better away from the puck. I need to be more, I don't know if disciplined is quite the right word, but just like most offensive defensemen, they're good with the puck. They're not good without it. And yeah, I think I look at him, Buchinger's down there. And, you know, outside that, I mean, they do have Tucker down there. I guess Skinner's down there, Loof's down there, but not a lot of them are not really maybe NHL ready to call up and come up. You know, Corey Schooneman is down there, who is a little bit more experienced, but not really someone who's going to move the needle a ton. So for me, if I'm looking for someone to play an offensive role like Perunovic would be doing, Johannesson could be someone that you look at.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Well, and it makes sense. At some point, you're going to want to get him up here. What? Now, he signed a two-year deal. Is that right? So he knows there's some run. He needs some run.
Yeah, I believe it's because of his age. His entry-level contract was 2 years, and I think he'll still be an RFA at the end of those 2 years.
Okay, so he's gonna want to give it. I think it's I would think he wants to get a look in the NHL this year. It gives guys in his position want to see, you know, light at the end of tunnel. Successful European player, can always go back and play in Europe. Still at a good age where he can develop in the NHL, though. So getting at least a taste of the NHL this year, with the expectation that he could try to push for a roster spot next year, would seem like a reasonable projection for one of the guys that Alexander Steen identified as a potential depth player.
Yeah, and like these types of signings are not always, but most of the time, you're collecting lottery tickets, right? You're seeing what European free agents can do, and you know, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. And if they do work out, you know, are you looking at someone like Joel Kiviranta, who I covered in Dallas, who was a free agent out of Finland and who had a big game 7 for them against Colorado, but for the most part was fourth line grinder, and now he's in Colorado. Or obviously the big example is Panarin, right? But that's a different scenario, I would expect. And for the Blues themselves, like, this hasn't been something that they've done a ton of. They signed Johannesson and Marcus Silvergaard this summer out of Sweden, and both of those guys said that Alex Steen had a massive impact on, I guess, the recruitment process, for lack of a better term. And you know, before that, it was Andre Heim last year who left to go back to Europe before the North American season even started. As soon as he was reassigned to Springfield, he went back to Europe and never really heard from again. And before that, the Blues hadn't had a ton of European guys come over and be part of the system and be part of the depth in potential call-ups from the AHL.
And I expect there'll be a little more of that taste now as they go forward, because again, Alexander Steen, he's wired in, worked over there, you know, of course from there, and knows the hockey system over there and knows the personnel over there. And hey, if you can add some depth at this point, you're still in a buildup, and you'll take, if you can find a guy for your roster while you're trying to get to where you want to be with all these guys you've drafted, you know, let's see what these guys can do. Now let's talk about the forward combinations. Once again, there's a bit of a lucky line shuffle. The fourth line did not have a great game. You mentioned at the top of the podcast here, Matt, that one of the turning points of the game against the Wild came with a bad shift by the fourth line, and they hadn't had a lot of bad shifts, but they did, and the game kind of turned and the Wild tilted the ice a bit, and that's exactly what you don't want to happen on the fourth line. So Kapanen's going to have a chance to draw in for Nathan Walker.
Yeah, and it's not to put that game on the fourth line entirely, but when the coach looks at the lineup and he looks for changes to make, there's an obvious spot to start with, and that's the guys that are playing the least, the guys who aren't pivotal who don't play on the power play, who get some time on the penalty kill. That's an easy spot for them, the coaches, to start with. And for tonight, Nathan Walker gets the short end of the stick there. I didn't think that he's been bad. You know, I haven't thought much of Kapanen's game so much this season. So just something that, you know, Drew Bannister, I think he wants to keep guys going in and out of the lineup, and especially after, you know, losing a game and not having a full 60 minute effort, he looks to make changes. So yeah, it's been a inconsistent lineup. I think this will be the fifth different lineup in as many games this season for the Blues. So obviously injuries have had something to do with that, but you know, a lot of times you're just kind of mixing and matching and trying to see what works, both on the fourth line and then also in the top six, where you move guys around, you're moving Kyra around, moving neighbors around and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it is interesting. You know, he's going to be asked pretty much every week about Pavel Buchnevich playing in the center. You know, a lot of teams do this sort of thing. Certainly the chief up in Toronto tried to convince William Nylander that he was a center. William Nylander said, "I'm not a center." So that was these things are, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid split them up, put them together. It's tougher. It's quite an adjustment playing center for Buchnevich when he just hasn't done much of it. Yet you're trying to balance two lines, which is what coaches do. You're trying to make sure that you got two lines that can score. He's so good at all aspects of the game, but I can't I wonder how that second line is going to work. You're trying to put Thomas and Kyrou together so that they can, again, so that they can try to feed each other and get, because they need to play at a very high level for this team at even strength in addition to what they do in the power play. And then, you know, you have a situation where they like Holloway at center, but, you know, you end up, ends up playing some wing if you're using Shen at center. Of course, earlier you used Shen on the wing because, and it didn't seem to go so bad when he's on the wing playing with a better group. So it's just, it's been a bit of a mishmash for those, for the top three lines.
Yeah, don't get used to any particular line. If you like a line, don't get used to it, because odds are it could be changing soon. You know, I think the one thing I wrote about this over the weekends, and through the first three games, it looked like the Blues are trying to get a different role for Pavel Buchnevich, and that much is obvious just from a move to center. But there are other layers to it, and limiting penalty kill time and getting him out in offensive zone starts, having him have second lines to match up against instead of top lines and top D pairs because he was on a line with Robert Thomas. So you add in easier matchups, more offensive zone starts, less penalty killing, and you have a guy who's going to be asked to do a lot more offensively because of situations that he's been put in. You add in the occasional shifts that he has with guys like Thomas and Kyrou after icings, after penalty kills, after goalie stoppages, you know, all of those situations, and you have Pavel Buchnevich in a different role than he's had before. You know, we'll see how long that goes throughout the season. I think the other night against Minnesota, he had a fair amount of shorthanded time, but I also kind of get wonky a little bit towards the end when the Blues pull the goalie while shorthanded, and you know, then suddenly you look at the stat sheet and Jordan Kyrou has some time on the penalty kill, and it's not quite the exact situation that they were given. So I wonder how much Pavel Buchnevich's role is gonna kind of change throughout the season, regardless of you know, center or wing, but in terms of matchups and offensive zone starts and special teams usage.
All right, last thing in the net front, for those who catch the net front today ahead of the game against the Islanders. I like the Islanders, what they did in the offseason. This has been an offensively challenged team with a defensive identity. Patrick Waugh's pushing out for more offense. They add Duclair to the front lines to play with Bo Horvat, a player we all love, and over on the other side, Matt Barzal, who's a very creative playmaking winger. And then you go to Russia for Siplikov, and he seems to be fitting in well with Brock Nelson, a goal-scoring center, and Kyle Palmieri, who still can get to the net as a power forward. So you got two viable lines. They go out and get two guys. They like their top six at the moment. Good challenge for the Blues.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they're just an old team. They're an old team. I don't really like their roster or their future very much, to be quite honest. Like Noah Dobson, like Matt Barzal, not really convinced on much else. I mean, obviously Brock Nelson, Anders Lee, Bo Horvat have had good careers, but there's not a ton for me to love out of that roster. And yeah, I don't know. I just
not a big fan. Well, Lou Lamoriello, as old friend Jack Quinn would call him here in St. Louis. He didn't mind paying a ton of money for bottom six forwards or even fourth line forwards, and it did kind of jam them up. And they have Sorokin coming back from a back injury, and they need him to play at a high level because, again, this is not a dynamic team. And but come on, you're not buying any of that Patrick Roy stock, the fiery bench coach. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I when I talked to Zach Bolduc this morning, I said, hey, do you still like talk to Patrick? And because Patrick Roy was Zach Bolduc's junior coach for the last 2 years in Quebec for the Remparts, and you know, Bolduc was like, no, don't really talk to him much, but you know, got a text from one of the assistant coaches for the Islanders, and asked, well, like, what was Wall like to play for? And he said, well, he was good. I really liked him because, you know, if you worked hard, you didn't have any issues with him, and he was hold people accountable and very honest, and so it seems like he knows what he's doing from a coaching perspective. You know, after the second time around, right? And you know, coaches can only do so much. I feel like I look at this roster and they're just a lot of, it's old, it's an older roster. with some deals on the books. I mean, I look at, we know what they did with Engvall earlier this season, and they got some more money on the books too for the coming years.
All right, that's a very, so you're giving us hope here today for all of us looking for a sunny outcome for the Blues, because the sports landscape could use some more sunshine for all the folks listening to the net front. You're thinking, okay, yeah, Islanders, I mean, they are who they are. They've got a brand, and it's not the most dynamic brand, you know, in the NHL right now. The last several years,
it's also just hockey, you know, game to game. It's, you don't know what's going to happen. And I'm sure people, when they look at the Blues roster, they might think the same thing. Not very exciting. A little bit older when you look at some of the ages, and you know, even when you look at some of the contracts. So it's not, I think the more that we've seen this Blues roster, we get used to it. But when you look at an Islanders team like that, you know, they're probably the third best team in their own city.
Well, this will be a showdown of two teams with payroll and efficiency. Something to look forward to tonight. We'll be back next week in the net front to see how this game goes and what else happens with the Blues. Until next time, for Matt DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been the Net Front. A reminder to check out all of our extra content and the digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. A lot of cool stuff there in addition to what you see in the print edition, some videos, of course, podcasts, a lot of stuff going on with all of our coverage. So please do check us out if you haven't already. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See ya.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch the chase for the cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.